This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, space mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
All right, so if you're watching this on YouTube, you see that I am wrapped up in 2 blankets. I have a hooded sweatshirt on, and I have a stocking cap on. That is because my dumbass unplugged my space heater for some reason on Friday when I was up here. Now it's Monday morning. It is 9 degrees outside, and in my office, my thermostat says 30 degrees. And so I'm freezing my balls off up here in my office. But we got to talk about deer hunting, dude. We just have to do it. I can't cancel.
You actually look like you're prepared for a late season hunt. I mean, you got the full sneak gear on and your blaze orange and everything. So, no, you look appropriate.
Hey, that's great. That's a great way to open it. If we'll just say this. If you're looking for some badass t-shirts, stocking caps, crew neck sweatshirts, go to fullsneakgear.com and go check out one of my companies. So there, thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yep.
All right, dude, it's been kind of a pretty cool past couple days. In the literal sense, it's been freezing here. And the other thing is I got my eyes now. The Iowa season is over. January 10th was the last day that you can shoot a buck in Iowa, late season muzzleloader. They do have an antlerless season that goes on, I believe, till the 19th. Mm-hmm. But there's been a lot of movement on the properties. And even a good, what I'm going to guess is a 4-year-old, maybe in that high 140s, low 150s, 10-pointer that I had early season with my daughter when we were kind of, and it might have been the buck this year that I drew back on and let an arrow go at, but it hit a branch and it kind of nosedived into the dirt.
Sure.
Type of deal. And so he's back. He made it through the gun season and he's on the property. He looks healthy based off of trail camera images. There's a couple other bucks that look like they've moved back into the property. And that makes me happy, dude. That lets me know that there's good deer in the area.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, I kind of had the same thing. So our season doesn't end till the 19th. But we went out, my brother and I did, last Wednesday, and I saw 30 plus deer. I saw 6 bucks. One of them definitely was a mature buck, and he's an 8-point that we've been watching for a little while. And then, So I got, intel where these deer were coming out of. So Friday I went and hung a new stand in it's just basically the point of a funnel. And I just wanted to get closer to these deer. So I got the stand all set up and then I decided I'm there. I might as well sit it. So I sat that Friday and I saw 2 deer. But Art, so we have like a late season here with gun and you can use bow, you can whatever. It's kind of just a free for all as far as that goes, as long as you got the tags. And it comes up, I think it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think it's 4 days. It might only be 3. So don't quote me on that, but I plan on going out maybe Friday, but of course, Friday is supposed to be almost 50 degrees here. So,
yeah, this weather is bananas.
It's crazy
this time of year. Like I've never seen, I don't know, this September. I mean, it's so dry. Maybe that has something to do with it. The hurricanes that went through, the drought mixed with like huge amounts of rain in short periods of time. I don't know what this all is. I'm not a climatologist or a meteorologist, but I just know it. Just this past year, this past 12 months has been pretty crazy as far as weather is concerned.
Yeah.
So for everybody listening right now, my space heater is on. Just that noise you're hearing is probably my space heater. Hopefully, I can edit it out. But just know that I'm doing this podcast for you. Even though I'm battling hypothermia right now, so
you just got done being sick. So,
exactly. Yeah. So, all right. Any other like late season news or anything like that we need to talk about before we start looking into this conversation about habitat and food plots?
I think, like I said last week. I mean, this is the time. If your season's over, you know, you can start doing the postseason scouting. Potentially there's deer dropping antlers and stuff too, so you could pick up a couple antlers, but I would spend the time wisely. You know, if you got some snow in your area and you can get on some trails, you know, go track them back to beds and everything, you'll learn a lot this late season and you're not going to intrude too awful much. I would just be cautious how many times you go in. Be productive with your time in there. Be sparing about it, and still, you know, be cautious with the wind, you know, and tracking in there, not letting all your scent blow into the bedding and stuff. You don't want to spook them completely out, especially if they've been dealing with a lot of snow or cold temperatures. You could definitely hurt some of those bucks that have lost so much weight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Trying to think. I do have one or two bucks that have already shed one side on camera. Nothing major, nothing that's going to make me go look at it. Plus, it's on a farm that's 4 hours away. So outside of that, I'm just kind of – I'm in a treading water type state right now as far as activities that I'm going to do. I'll probably go shed hunting, but I'm going to mix my upcoming shed hunting trips with a habitat improvement activity in mind. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I want to talk a little bit about habitats. I want to talk about habitat first, because you can't plant any food plots in January, February. I mean, you can do some type of frost seeding type of things like that, but when you're getting into the dirt, that's not happening until April timeframe, April, May timeframe. So, I want to talk about habitat right now, and I just want to kick this conversation off straight to you And I want to say, do you do any type of habitat work? And what I mean by that is hinge cutting, invasive species removal, spraying, mowing, burning, anything like that in the next couple months?
So we don't do a whole lot of hinge cutting, so to say. We actually do more invasive removal and some of the I scrap trees. We'll remove them and stuff, cut them down, and we actually dig them out too, just so that way they're completely gone. So we'll do that here coming up, especially if we got temperatures like what we've had. Some of them we will still be able to dig out, or we can level the area, and then we'll burn what we can, and then we'll just basically clear the site and get it ready for spring. And it looks like this year with no snow, I mean, we'll be able to get equipment in there and do what we need to do and be set up in good fashion for planting our spring food plots and stuff.
Yeah. Straight up, we need snow. I mean, we need more moisture in the ground, period. So I hope we get it. So when it comes, like, what are you looking for? Like, what is your thought process as far as, hey, I am going to remove these trees and invasive species because, like, what is the because? Why?
So the because on ours is the property that we can actually do this on is loaded with honeysuckle. It is loaded with box elder trees. There's some gigantic oak trees. And over time, these oak trees, they just naturally are falling down. I mean, they are dying and falling down. And they create it to where there's no understory. They got such a huge canopy on them. So, I mean, we need to get in and remove some of the oak trees as we go. But our focus before we get to that, because the oak trees are still producing acorns. So, I mean, that is still a food that's beneficial. So we'll go in and we'll take out box elders and we'll do a section each year. And then we'll take out the honeysuckle and we'll clear those out. And then we'll basically expand our food plots into those areas and create little, not sanctuaries, but little like staging areas. You know, they'll be able to come out of the timber behind us and into these staging areas, and they're still secluded somewhat with the trees, and then they'll be able to come out into the, you know, regular ag fields. So that's our primary focus, is getting rid of those basically two species. You know, honeysuckle and box elder trees are basically the main concerns we have right now.
Okay. All right. So in the past, when you've done this, have you seen a direct impact in deer? Like, because the reason that we're doing this, these types of activities, is to try to get more sunlight to the ground and create a thicker environment for deer to feel comfortable in, right? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. What are the results? Is this an immediate result? Is this something that you see take a couple years? What's the story there?
So it depends on how we do it. If we end up planting it into a food plot right away, we'll try to do something that's going to be beneficial for the soil, and it's just going to be an annual food plot, and it's going to be something that breaks down fairly quickly. If we plant it in a food plot, it depends on what it is. If it's something that's they're regular, used to every year, the deer will be in there. They'll get used to their surroundings within the first couple months. If we let it go after we've removed the trees or invasive stuff, and we just kind of let it naturally come up into grass and stuff, we've found that it actually becomes more bedding than anything. I have seen in spots where we completely clear something and they will change their routes on the outskirts of it. Either way, I don't think it's been negative, because obviously in a year or two, all those examples are beneficial for the herd. And I keep looking at it, and we keep discussing it back and forth with, if we get rid of some of this nasty canopy and these nasty trees and everything, eventually, basically what a deer needs is 5 foot. If he has 5 foot of cover, he can walk through that, or she can walk through that and feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And is it, do you have any examples of you, I don't know, let me back up a second. When you take on a project like this, are you talking about like 500 feet by 500 feet, or are you talking about like 1, 2, 3 acres? Like, how big of projects are you taking on every year?
So most of the time it's about a half an acre, and we literally just dissect it and we leave what we can leave for good trees. And then we decide that, you know, hey, we know that the deer are coming out of here and we want to funnel them this way. But we also know that if we want this better down the line, we have to get rid of X. So we don't take, you know, the entire property or the entire section or 2 acres and we don't do a massive amount. We just do, oh, an eighth of an acre, a quarter acre, a half acre at a time. But what we found too is we've done it a couple of different ways where we'll actually dig a hole out in our open food plots, and we'll put the trees in there and we'll burn the pile. We'll get rid of all the stuff that way. We've also found that if we take the trees and lay them, basically like you would in a hinge, the tree would be laying down, and we can create beds with just natural brush piles and create mm-hmm. natural walking funnels and stuff for these deer. And that works too. The only problem of it is when you leave all that debris like that, basically it just makes it look like garbage, and there's nothing yeah. beneficial to that either. So we found actually now it's just to not dig a hole, not leave the stuff up, but just put a big pile out in the middle of the field and burn it all as much as we can, spread the ashes out, and then we're actually, you know, creating more with that. So
okay. All right. Now, it sounds to me like you're doing a little bit of the same thing, but it just depends on what you're doing with it at the end. So you're like, you're removing trees, box elders. On the farm that I hunt, there's a lot of Osage orange and a lot of black locust. I believe it's the black locust, the yep. ones that have all the thorns on them, right? So
yep.
A lot of those trees don't necessarily have a timber value per se, maybe for like fence posts or you know, scrap wood or maybe even firewood or something like that, but this is old cattle pasture that I'm mm-hmm. talking about. And so those are the trees that I plan on attacking, because I had a conversation with the landowner, and the landowner was like, I said, hey, listen, here's my plan. The natural browse on your property is pretty bad. It's pretty wide open from about 6 foot to down, whatever the deer can reach. It's all eaten. So my goal is to cut down some of these lesser value trees and create sunlight that's going to bring the forest floor up, create a higher stem count lower, and give the deer something to eat, more natural forage. And on top of that, nesting for, and I said, it's going to improve everything from turkey to pheasants to songbirds to, you know, just really all wildlife, creating protection from coyotes, bobcats, you know, whatever the case is. And so just a thriving environment and a thriving ecosystem. And I really do feel that, and of course, I'm not an expert, but I've talked to a lot of experts, and I feel like that is like a good ecosystem is good for not just deer, but for all animals.
Right. Right. I agree. And I think that's what you have to look at when you're going to do habitat improvement is, do you want to create bedding or do you want to create food? And so when we go in, we normally go in with the mindset of, this is a small piece of property. We're going to clean it up the best that we can, and we are going to give them as much food as we can, because we know our surrounding properties are bedding areas. We know that they have, you know, areas of switchgrass and different cover spots that we can't necessarily provide, because it's going to take a long time to create those things. So let's give them immediate food.
Right. Right. And so that's your guys' focus is food.
Right. Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to share my thoughts on what my goals are, and then we'll get into the food conversation, because I think the food plot conversation, we're going to have another one later in this winter once we get into food plot planning season. So I'm going to break down my habitat goals for the one specific farm. Now, the other farm, if I wanted to, I probably could do a little habitat work, like some hinge cutting and things like that, but there's not as many junk trees on this farm. It's more of like your elms, your oaks, your maples, like stuff that could have better value as far as having it age and become timbered and getting a timber
a check from a timber company, basically. Right. The company or the property that I hunt is a grown up cattle pasture. It's been it has ag on it, but the family has owned it for over 100 years, and it used to be straight cattle all over it, right? And so the places where there's no longer cattle, it has grown up into this, these trees, these Osage orange, these black locusts. Yes, there are some maples mixed in with it. Yes, there are some oaks mixed in with it. What's the tree that has the bean pods?
Oh, are you? The bean pods would be the catalpa, unless you're talking about a locust. A locust will have the pods too.
The pods, yeah. Okay, yeah. All right. So there's a couple different locust trees that do that too, that don't have thorns, right?
Yeah. Yep. There is. So there's a honey locust. There's a black locust.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So there's some of those in there. There's a couple of, you know, there's several other trees within this, within on this farm that are actually good quality, but the majority is junk. So the property that I'm interested in doing the habitat work on runs north south. Okay. And on the west side of this creek, really what you have is almost like a hallway. So it's a wide open hallway. Once the leaves fall off the trees, it's still cover for them, but it's not great cover because you can see quite a ways. Like right now, I could probably almost see from one high point to the next high point through this timber. All right. So what I am going to try, here's my thought process here. I want you to think about this. All the travel runs north-south. Or south north, and it comes through a couple really good terrain features, where the creek bends into the terrain, and it causes steep drop offs, right? Uh-huh. And so the deer don't go east west on those big, I guess you would call them cliffs or big cutoffs. They use where they turn back out of the terrain, and sure. It creates more of a natural path for them, right? Okay, so knowing that, I am going to try and create a hallway.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to try and create specific bedrooms on different sides of this hallway. Most of them are going to be on the west side of this hallway because most of the time you're getting west-northwest winds. So right. I feel like if I want to hunt on a specific side of a bedding area, it needs to be the east side of a bedding area because I know that whether it's a southeast or a southwest, west, northwest, those are going to be the predominant winds during the hunting season.
Sure.
And so I'm going to go in there and I'm going to create, I don't know, maybe 200 square feet, mm-hmm. you know, like basically a person's living room. I'm going to cut down and hinge cut trees down. And I'm not necessarily looking for, it will come eventually, but my thought process is to get deer to want to bed there all the time. Not just in the spring and the summer when the vegetation is heavy, but after the leaves fall off as well. And that's mm-hmm. only going to benefit me.
Right.
Because they're going to stay on the property. So the goal is to, and I'm thinking, this is a 2 or 3 year project where I'm going to focus real heavy on one or two areas, and then I'm going to move south a little bit, and I'm going to work on a couple other areas in hopes. I mean, it's very simple. Just get cover in there, lower to the ground. If the tree dies, I'm still going to have some cover lower to the ground. Sunlight's going to get in there. It's going to grow up. The only thing I don't feel comfortable doing would be burning inside the timber because there's a lot of multiflower rose in there because it is old cattle pasture. Mm-hmm. And I think it will grow up more multiflower rose, but it's something that I have to, like, I don't feel comfortable doing that, and I'm not going to do it. But let's be honest, deer live in multiflower rose. Deer live in junk habitat. I'm just trying to create these little bedrooms for them where it's not going to be maybe a whole deer herd, but it might be one buck.
Right.
It might be two does, you know, whatever the case is. And then they're going to get comfortable there and they're going to want to stay there more and just be on the property more, and which also more does to live on that property. And that means bucks come in the late October, early November timeframe. So that's, and then basically I access it from the east. I set up, I climb up one of those steep embankments, and I basically have a highway in front of me.
Sure.
And I'm just catching deer cruising up and down this this hallway during the rut.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. Like you said, you know, it's, if that's your goal for your habitat improvement is to have the bedding there, then it sounds like you know which way your wind's coming from, you know your access and everything. I think it's a win, you know, and it just doing something is going to help, right? I mean, because if it's a wore down cattle pasture, I've hunted those in the past before, they can be beneficial to an extent. But if you can take it to the next level by just manipulating some of the trees or something in there, it big return on it.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So outside of that, man, that's the goal, right? When it comes to habitat work, right, I really do feel that it can be done on a small scale to have a bigger impact, right? And so a lot of people, including myself, I've tried to take on some habitat projects in the past, like maybe cut down a couple trees, and I just felt intimidated by it. And I had a guy who, he runs a 2,500 acre paradise, basically. And long story short, he said, two things happen. Number one, it's a success. Number two, it may not turn out the way you want it and envision in your head, but it's still better than nothing, right? And then the third thing, and this is just life in general, you fail at this project and then you learn from it.
And that just goes right back to the roots of learning how to hunt deer. You know, you're learning how to do habitat improvements and stuff. And that's the thing. We were intimidated from day one with, gosh, there's so many trees we got to get out of here. Oh, there's so much to clean up. Well, what are we going to do with it? You know, and we have access, because we're self-employed, to different pieces of equipment and everything. And we can get rid of it. We can burn it. We can cut it and all that. Time is a big thing, you know. So trying to budget, like, how much time do you want to spend on how much land? But when you fail, you actually do learn quite a bit from it. And we've learned that over the course of having this property now for, oh gosh, what's it been, 12 years. There's definitely different things that we can do to make this even better. And part of it's not necessarily putting in more food. Part of it's putting in screens and creating, like what you said, like a hallway, a walkway, you know, and getting them to funnel in this way. Because out in front of us, it's all wide open, you know. So to get those deer to come out from those staging areas or come out from those bedding areas, we've created those little staging pockets. And then they'll come out, but then like when they come out, they're wide open. And so some of our stuff in front of us, because this is a really long piece of property, some of it in front of us, we need to create little buffers or little barriers. So that way they have to actually come in, investigate to get around it, to see what's in the next, you know, food plot or destination.
Right, right. And so that's the goal is, I mean, it's not very complex, and I think it's going to take maybe 8 hours to do what I want leading up for next season. This isn't a multi-day project. This is me going in, making a complete mess and creating thick, nasty habitat. And that's ultimately, in my experience, is what deer want. Now, the next step after that, like if I'm looking in down a multi-year track on this particular farm, then I have to go back to the landowner and ask him what I can and cannot do, right? Sure. Do I ask if I can frost seed some clover or some alfalfa in his CRP or in his, you know, because he's getting paid CRP for some of this property. And within that, I believe you can dedicate 10% or some kind of percentage to wildlife. So that means out of this, I'm not 100% sure. Let's say just for numbers, right? If there's 10 acres of CRP, I think I can use 1 acre for food plots.
Yep. Yep. For you're correct.
Natural type food plots for wildlife. And so that means I might be able to do a little burn job or go in there with a plow and or a cultivator and work some stuff up and sprinkle some frost seed some clover into it. Another thing that doesn't have to be beautiful. It doesn't right. have to look like a hunting video, like these big, you know, box blind, perfect manicured food plots, because deer spend majority of their time browsing on natural browse. And so Absolutely. If you can mix in some of that clover, alfalfa, maybe even some radishes or whatever the case is, in with some of this natural browse, I think that's just a win.
Yeah, and that's why I say, like, our main goal on our property is simply just to give them more food, more opportunity right. at something different that they might not be able to get from the neighbors. You know we can pull them off of there. We know we have, you know, acorns. We know we have natural browse. So we just entice them with a couple different varieties of things, and it generally seems to work. But moving forward, yeah, definitely we just need to get rid of some of the scrap trees and some of the invasive stuff. But to what you had said earlier, you know, like with the multiflower rose, I mean, honeysuckle is the same way. You know, they're very invasive, but yet the deer love that stuff. It's thick. They can hide in it. You know, it's generally at that 5 foot height or better, and it's perfect for it. So if you're not worried about necessarily a nutritional value and you're more worried about like seclusion for the deer or them to feel safe, maybe you leave pockets of that stuff and it's okay.
Yeah. 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 Let me ask you a weird question. This is something that I look at it as a shortcut, and that way it's not a lot of work. Okay. So you'll see when a tree dies naturally out in the woods, right? It starts to fall apart. It starts to decompose. It starts to like the bark, all that bark falls off. A lot of that nutrients kind of goes back into the ground, and then stuff starts to grow up around it. There's obviously no cover. And as a landscape guy, do you have any experience with like poison nails, to where you can just hammer a poison nail into a tree and it dies over time and it doesn't? Do you have any experience with that?
Not poison nails. I mean, most of the time, if we want to get rid of something, we cut it flush in a fresh cut, then we'll put Tordon, you know, okay. stump killer basically on it. And it does work. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it. As a matter of fact, here at home, the farmer wanted to clean up around his field edges. So one year I helped him out and he says, well, I'm going to be brushing each cut. So he literally had a little bucket and a paintbrush and he had a guy in a loader who would literally brush each cut. Well, now those trees have actually died because of that. And it was fine because they weren't, there were trees of no value or whatever to me, even though they were on my side. I chose to leave them for the time being because what I'm doing at home is I'm replacing trees. So we take, five out, I put 20 in. Well, it does work. It takes some time, but I think that's been 3 or 4 years now and those trees are completely dead. So,
yeah. Yeah. Cause I look at something like that. I have to do research on that. So I'm looking at this. I think what happens is they may not be poisonous, but they might be like a copper nail. Mm-hmm. And the way that copper deteriorates in the tree causes a chemical reaction that ends up killing the tree. Okay. And so I don't know if you remember the story several years ago where an Alabama fan went to Auburn, and Auburn at one of these intersections within campus had this tree that was – it meant a lot. It had a lot of tradition. It had a lot. And he said that used a poison nail or a copper nail or something like that into that tree. And eventually it died. It ended up killing it.
Okay. Yeah. No.
And so I look at something like that, if it's the right thing to do or not. I'm not 100% sure. This is something I should probably follow up on, but as an option, As a poor man's option, you buy the nail, you got the hammer, you just go into the tree, you nail it in, and in a handful of years, it's dead, and it allows sunlight to get to the floor, and you don't have to worry about falling a tree. You don't have to worry about, you know, trying to run a chainsaw. You just hammer it in, and it dies naturally.
Yeah, so when you talk about these trees, are you talking something fairly significant in size?
Well, it could potentially be. I mean, okay. Let's just say some of these bigger locust trees, mm-hmm. right? With all the thorns and things like that. I clear out a little path. I hammer one of those nails in, and and it may not die instantly, mm-hmm. but in 2 or 3 years it'll be dead.
Yeah.
And then it does. Obviously, it's not falling to the ground, but it's allowing sunlight in.
Yeah. So that's I was going to say. To that point, it depends on the amount of time that you want to spend on this project. Is this a 5-year plan? Is this a 10-year plan? One thing I will say, when guys are hinge cutting or cutting any trees to remove them or whatever, maybe use extra caution in the woods, because those trees get hung up top. And if you're not a tree expert, man, you can really get yourself in a bind.
Yeah. Be very cautious. I've seen that firsthand So I did that last year. So I went in on a run and gun, right? So I went in on a run and gun. I brought a pole saw and I set up my tree stand, and there was a big branch right in my face. All right. And so I went in and the branch was probably a 5-inch branch. Like, it was a big branch on this Osage orange tree that came out right towards my stand. I needed it down. So I decided to cut the whole branch down, and I didn't cut it all the way through. I just got it to the point where it started to sag.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know, and it got caught up on another tree branch. Then I left. I came back 3 or 4 days later, and then I was in my tree stand, and it fell.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these smaller, branches slapped down across my leg and my tree stand. And so I would say, if you are going to do some kind of cutting, make sure that the tree that you're cutting is all the way to the ground, so that you don't have a scenario like that happen. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them, firsthand, where, we go in there and we try to cut them, and they get caught up in the top canopy of another tree, and then we got to get the, backhoe in there or something to shove it over. But I mean, I've seen some really nasty stuff with people not knowing what they were doing. And then it comes back on them, or, it falls the wrong way. Just use caution. That's all I say with it. So that's why we try to, we pick an area where we're on the outside, and we can get a path going in, and we start removing that way. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I would say with that. Otherwise, like you're saying, with these poison nails, or if you can make a fresh cut somewhere on a tree and put some Tordon on it. I mean, those are great options too, if it's a 5 to 10 year plan of trying to eliminate those trees.
Yeah. 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 And so the one thing that I forgot to talk about with this hallway, conversation that I want to create, hallway with bedrooms, is access routes. Like, I would really focus on, at least this is what I'm doing. I'm focusing on access route first to a good terrain feature type. And then I have my access route, I have my tree stand location, and then I am creating these bedrooms on this hallway around where my tree stands or my saddle platforms will be hung.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the goal, is to access first, stand location. Because in order, you can't just go in, create a bedding area. And maybe what happens is, I got this great bedding area, deer are coming in and out of it, but I can't access it
right now.
Because of, I can only access from it a certain direction. Maybe the wind isn't, let's say I set things up for an east wind. This year it would have been great. Mm-hmm. But next year I'm like, maybe I'll only get one east wind. Or something like that throughout the course of my rut vacation. So I really do think that you have to reverse engineer your habitat work to know, where do you think the deer are coming from? If you're creating a place where they're going to be, you have to know, is this a morning hunt? Is this an afternoon hunt? What's my access route going to be? What's the terrain feature that I'm hunting? And then build your habitat around that. Again, this is coming from someone who has never done that type of thing. One of the next podcasts that we will be doing on this will be with some sort of quote unquote expert, or someone who has way more experience than what we do. So
sure.
So pay attention to that. I'm just, I want to have the Dan Johnson version of this, the inexperienced thought process on this. And then I'm going to go in and do it, because I'll be completely honest, man. I'm not the guy. I like to look into experts, but I like to do things myself to see what works myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's just my style. I'll talk with some pros about it, but at this end of the day, I have to be the one who does it. I have to be the one that makes the decisions, and then I can't blame it on anybody if it does go wrong. It's my fault.
Oh, I think that's the way you learn the best, is when you're hands on.
Yeah. Right. Is there any other things that people need to be aware of if they are going to be taking on their first habitat improvement project this upcoming winter?
I would say if you're doing the habitat stuff, like you were saying with the access, I mean, that's a huge thing, because I was thinking ours kind of lies a little bit differently, where when we walk in, we're walking, you know, the property's 1,900 and some feet long, and we're walking in and up and over a hill, and that whole field is open, you know, so our food is right out in front of our woods. And so we don't have great access to this property, because if deer are already in that field and they're feeding, they pick us off right away. Right. But what I would say is, if you're going to do some habitat stuff, the biggest thing I would say is, if you're going to put food plots in, do a soil test, know what your pH is, and know what to put on. And if you don't know what to put on, I mean, you can ask. The local farm service stores, they have a lot of the stuff that you can use and buy. A lot of the farm and fleets or fleet farms or whatever, they have some chemicals, they have some fertilizers and stuff that can get you started. But do a simple pH test. I think that's huge.
Yeah. All right. The only other thing that I think I want to talk about is, when we are out on the property and we are doing our habitat work, I almost feel like you should have another person with you, especially if you're brand new to this and you've never cut down a tree before, or you've never, I don't know, like you've never done this stuff. Even if that person isn't doing anything, just be there to watch you, or someone who can make a phone call if a tree does fall on you. You know, you know what I mean? Like, just have somebody else there that you might be able to talk it out with. Maybe it's a buddy. Maybe it's a person on the property that you hunt with. Maybe it's the landowner. Maybe it's your wife who just sits there and does nothing.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that might be a good idea for someone who is brand new to this kind of thing, because I will be doing this with another person. Who that person is, I don't know. It might be my daughter. At least she can call 911. And really, that's all I'm doing.
Yeah. I will say, if you do decide to do habitat improvement with a fellow hunter that is hunting on the same property as you, I almost guarantee that you will be butting heads at some point, because you're going to look at it in a different way. You each are going to have a different perspective of how you think the deer are going to move through there or whatever. So be ready for that if you're doing it that way. Otherwise, you know, it's like same thing. You know, I take my kids with me, or I take, you know, my brother comes with. But yeah, definitely, I think having somebody there is a must.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, outside of that, I think we're good to go. I wanted to keep this somewhat short today. Jason, any final thoughts?
Not much. Anybody that's got season left, enjoy it, because it's going to be another grueling, 8-9 months before we can do this again. So,
right. Well, the good thing is, this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast, but there is shed hunting, right? Yes. There is maybe some habitat work. There's definitely turkey season. There's food plot season. There is trail camera inventory. There, another thing that we're going to be talking about here in the next couple episodes is the taking advantage. And this is, in my opinion, where a lot of guys don't take advantage of post-season scouting with no vegetation on the ground or on the trees. Yeah. You can look at the terrain, and especially if there's snow, man, it is a roadmap to killing deer. Period. And so we're going to be talking about that, and fishing and mushrooms, and then obviously we're by the time July hits, we're back at it, man. We're back into the velvet game. And yeah. So I don't know, man. It's full. It comes full circle. It's 365 if you want to make it. I know that I'm the kind of guy who I'm not as 365 as I used to be, but I am every couple of weeks I'll pop my head in during the off season. I'll be like, okay, what's going on here? What do I need to be doing?
Things yeah, like that. I agree. I'm not as much as I used to be, but I definitely each year it seems like I get a little more amped up about this part of it or that part of it. You know, the last couple of years has been saddle hunting and being a little more mobile. And I think there's more to it, and you can enjoy it, especially if you get other people involved and you have a buddy to do it with or the kids to do it with. You know, it is pretty fun to set up new cameras in different locations or do the habitat work. And you can make it 365. Absolutely.
Absolutely. My man, Jason, I appreciate your time. Good luck to everybody out there who's finishing up the season, maybe trying to fill the freezer. If you're in the South and you're rocking and rolling, good luck on your rut adventures. I know that what we're talking about is more today is more Midwest type focus, but there are plenty of episodes that we've already done about the rut that you guys can go listen to, you know, from 3 or 4 months ago. And you can relate to those. Outside of that, be safe, have fun, good vibes, and we will talk to you next week.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.